Hi, everyone. This is Earl Sewell, author, producer, and narrator of this podcast. I want to take a moment to thank everyone who listens, follows, and subscribes to this show. Additionally, I have some exciting news. Recently, this podcast has begun ranking on podcast charts globally. Around the world, the podcast is in the top 200, and here in the United States, it's ranked number 48 in the fiction category. I want to say thank you to everyone for supporting this podcast. If you've not done so, please share it with friends and family who you know will enjoy the show. Every bit of support helps. Speaking of support, as with all things, it takes resources to produce this show. If you'd like to support what's being done here, here's one way you can. Visit Amazon.com and purchase one of my more than 20 novels. Just go to Amazon.com and type Earl Sewell Books in the search box. You'll get a list of my books that I've written. Hopefully, you'll find one that you will enjoy. Another effective way you can help support the show is to leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Those ratings and reviews really help others to find the show. Also, if you're a power listener to this podcast and you've been following it from the beginning, I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear your thoughts about this show, about this podcast. To do so, drop me an email with the title Lenny Gray in the subject line to earlsewellvoiceover@yahoo.com. That's earlsewellvoiceover@yahoo.com. Once again, that's earlsewellvoiceover@yahoo.com. I would love to hear from you. Also, I'm currently recording the next audio drama. It's currently in production. At the conclusion of this episode, you can hear a preview of what's to come. I hope that you and those who mean the most to you are healthy and safe during this global pandemic. We are all in this together and must do our part to help keep not only ourselves safe, but our neighbors and our fellow global citizens too. Seriously, people, be safe out there. Now, let's get to the next episode of Lenny Gray. Katie Books Productions presents Lenny Gray, an audio drama written, produced, and narrated by Earl Sewell. Previously on Lenny Gray.
You're a good boy, Curly. That's why you and your family are protected from trouble around here. Hell, just a few days ago, Roy and JW had to put a boy in his place for thinking that he deserved a better position in life.
Deep lines formed in Mr. Bettis's forehead as he told Curly about it. Curly humbly said,
Thank you, sir. I'm glad to know that my family is protected and that you likes our work out in the field.
Curly, I'm going to show you just how much I like you. Tell them boys to come over here.
Mr. Bettis reached into the back seat of his car and grabbed a grocery bag. Curly motioned for his sons.
Willie, Bud, get over here.
I got a stick of peppermint candy for each of you boys,
said Mr. Bettis, handing them the red and white striped candy. Willie and Bud eagerly took it. Curly prompted them so that they wouldn't forget their manners.
Thank you,
they both said.
Well, Curly, you can keep the newspaper. Oh, and I'll put the price of the peppermint candy on your account.
Thank you, sir,
said Curly.
All right, gal, take care,
Mr. Bettis said as he waved to Lenny Gray. Curly held onto the newspaper and looked at the photograph of Jesse Owens with the winning medals around his neck. It confused him as to why Mr. Bettis would say that he didn't think Jesse Owens should have run. But he had bought it to him like it was something important. A shift happened inside of Curly's mind. Did Mr. Bettis really like him, or did he hate him? Curly didn't know how to tell the difference because he had a difficult time understanding how Mr. Bettis could smile at him and say something mean-spirited at the same time. Thank you. Early Sunday morning, Lenny Gray was making a pallet on the front porch of her shanty for her son, Roosevelt, whom she'd given birth to. Lenny Gray's plans for the day was to wash her clothes and the clothes of others that she took in to make extra money. Once Roosevelt was situated, she took one of the large quilts and submerged it in a tub of water and began the task of cleaning it. She had just finished washing the quilt and was hanging it on a clothesline when an unfamiliar voice startled her.
"How you doing this fine morning?"
She heard a voice ask from the opposite side of the quilt. Startled, she pulled back the quilt to see which neighbor had come by. The person she saw standing there was a man. He was wearing slacks, a suit jacket, a straw hat, and carrying a suitcase.
"Fine, and yourself?"
Lenny Gray greeted him, sensing the man was friendly and meant no harm. He looked to be around Curly's age, and he was just a little shorter.
"I could use some water if you got some,"
said the man. "I got plenty of pump water. It's brown in color and don't taste all that good. But if you're thirsty, I suppose it'll do the trick," said Lenny Gray, moving back to the porch and placing more laundry in the tub of water.
"I expect pump water will do just fine," said the man,
half smiling and revealing most of his teeth were missing. Over the years, Lenny Gray also lost several of her teeth, and as a result, she didn't smile much, and when she did on occasion through laughter, she covered her mouth with her hand.
"Willie," Lenny Gray called to her son.
"Huh?"
"Bring a jar of that pump water out here," Lenny Gray instructed. "You ain't from around here."
"No, ma'am. Just passing through this side of town. My family live on the other side. Ain't too far from here. I'm only staying for a little while, and then I'll be heading up to Harlem to record a record,"
said the man, sitting the suitcase down.
"Is that right?"
Lenny Gray said curiously as she gave him her undivided attention. "Where you coming from?"
Money, Mississippi. You ever been up there to Harlem?"
"Who, me? No. I've been around here for a long time. Before that, I was in Alabama."
At that moment, Willie appeared with a jar of water.
"Ma, who he?"
Willie asked. "Just a stranger passing through. Show some manners and give the man the water," Lenny Gray said. Willie stepped off the porch and handed the man the drink.
Thank you,"
he said as he took long gulps.
"Name is Sonny Boy Williamson."
"Well, it's nice to meet you, Sonny Boy. I'm Lenny Gray, and this here is my boy, Willie."
"Fine-looking young man,"
Sonny Boy smiled.
"Do you know where the men folk hang around at?"
"Well, most of the men hang around the juke joint they got not too far from here, or they hang around in town. This time of day, I'd say you'd find most of the field men in town."
Lenny Gray motioned in that direction.
"Well, that's where I'm headed,"
said Sonny Boy. "I thought you said you were going to see your people."
"I am. I'm just stopping where the men folks here to play a little music and hopefully make a little money so I can be on my way,"
said Sonny Boy.
"Do you know how to play?" Lenny Gray asked.
"Ma'am, I've been playing music here since I was a little boy."
"Can I hear something?"
Willie asked innocently. Chuckling, Sonny Boy decided to oblige. He removed his harmonica and blew it a few times.
What you want to hear?"
"The blues. Me and my daddy like the blues. My daddy say the blues teach people about life,"
Willie said, folding his arms and waiting to hear if Sonny could play.
"Well, son, I am the right man for that,"
said Sonny Boy, who began to blow a melody and tap his foot to keep pace.
"Why you smiling like that?"
Willie asked, noticing his mother snapping her fingers on one hand while covering her mouth with the other.
He looked at the stranger and then back at Lenny Gray. It was then that Sonny Boy stopped. That's a mighty good plan. You made me smile. I ain't had no reason to do a smile like that in a long time, Lenny Gray admitted.
Well, around these parts ain't really much to smile about, I reckon, said Sonny Boy,
taking a look around at the vastness of the fields. Ain't that the God's truth? Lenny Gray agreed. Sonny Boy put away his harmonica.
Well, I best get going now if I'm gonna catch the men folk,
he said as he handed back the empty jar. Well, all right, bye-bye, said Lenny Gray.
By the way, you folks heard about the fight coming up?
Sonny Boy asked. No, I don't know nothing about no fight, Lenny Gray answered as she checked on Roosevelt.
Well, has your husband heard about it?
He ain't said nothing about no fight. Lenny Gray looked puzzled.
Well, how y'all get news around here?
Lenny Gray shrugged her shoulders. It just come when people hear about it. Sometime, my husband go into town, and he asked one of the nicer white folks what the paper say.
Y'all need to get one of these children around here to read things to you,
said Sonny Boy. Ain't no school around here. No teacher either.
Is that right?
Said Sonny Boy. That's more of a statement than a question. Putting more clothes in the tub, Lenny Gray said, ain't been no school teacher around here since the flood of 27. Wait, let me think about that. No, I'd say since about 1930. That's when my oldest was in school last.
That's just sad. I remember that flood,
said Sonny Boy, who paused in thought and thought about the loved ones he'd lost.
What fight are you talking about?
Willie asked Sonny Boy. Perking up, Sonny Boy did a little shadow boxing.
Joe Louis fight. He the heavyweight champion of the world. His fight coming up next week.
My daddy heard Joe Louis lost the championship.
Willie folded his arms across his chest, believing Sonny had just lied.
He didn't want it back, and Joe was going to fight that journeyman who beat him. His name is Max Schmelin,
said Sonny Boy.
Y'all ain't got no radio?
Mr. Bettis got one, Willie answered. How long ago Joe win championship back?
A while ago. Have y'all heard of Hitler?
I heard the name a few years ago, back in 36, said Lenny Gray. Sonny Boy sighed.
Ma'am, I don't mean no harm. But if you come to town, I'll fill you and everybody else in on what's going on out there in the world.
My husband say, ain't no need of us to know too many things about the world. We just country people living a simple life is all.
That sounds like your husband talking. What do you say about that? Don't you want to know what things are going on for yourself and your own peace of mind?
His question silenced Lenny Gray. Over the years, Curly had knocked a lot of the thinking for herself out of her head, or so she thought. Lenny Gray lied. I guess I ain't got a thought about it one way or the other.
What about you, boy? You want to know what's going on in the world?
Willie slowly nodded his head.
Well, that's good. Ma'am, thank you for the water. And if your boy ain't doing too many chores, it'd probably be a good idea for him to come and listen to what I got to say.
I'll think on it, Lenny Gray said, as Sonny Boy turned on his heels and continued up the road.
Where'd he come from, Mama?
Willie asked as Sonny disappeared. Don't know. By looking at his shoes and judging by the way he didn't complain about the taste of the pump water, seemed to me like he'd been walking for a long time.
He probably know all kinds of things,
Willie said, seemingly impressed by the man. Willie, you go on and follow him and come back and tell me everything he say about what's happening in the world.
Okay, I'll go get Bud.
No. Don't take Bud with you. He talks too much. This little thing you're doing is for me. I want to know what's going on, and I know that you got a good memory, and you can tell it to me, Lenny Gray said, as she pulled more clothes out of the wash to hang up.
What about my chores? If I don't do them, Daddy's going to be mad when he get back from Swan Lake with Minnie.
You leave handling your father to me. Lenny Gray motioned for him to get on down the road. Carmen swiveled her wrist to glance at her wristwatch as she shuffled up the steps of Nikki's apartment building. It was 6 a.m. on Saturday, and the Chicago air was already heavy with sweaty humidity. "I hate this sticky, clammy weather," Carmen complained, as she wiped perspiration from her forehead and the base of her neck. "Nikki had better have her behind out of bed," Carmen muttered, as she noticed a peculiar, scruffy-looking man exiting the brick building. The man was wearing a green t-shirt and cut-off blue jean shorts with black grime stains on the thighs. The grungy man had a face that only a mother could love and reminded Carmen of the scrawny rock and roll icon Mick Jagger. As Carmen approached the entrance, he held the door open for her. "Thank you," she whispered as she eased by him and walked over and pressed a silver button on the wall to call for the elevator. She stared mindlessly at the orange elevator light paused on the 8th floor. She sighed impatiently, then turned around to look out a nearby window while she mulled over her thoughts. Carmen was disillusioned with the fact that Nikki wasn't doing anything useful with her life. Her baby sister had a day job at an adult bookstore as a peep show girl and an evening job as a stripper at a seedy gentleman's club. Their parents had to be turning over in their graves knowing that Nikki was making a living, exposing her body to men old enough to be her grandfather. That wasn't the way either of them were raised. "Yeah," Carmen whispered to herself as she continued to glance out the window. "Nikki's life is dreadful, in my opinion." Carmen shouldered much of the blame for Nikki's appalling lifestyle, and the guilt she toted around was a heavy burden on her heart. Carmen continually attempted to clear the unspoken tension between her and her sister, but reconciling with Nikki was turning out to be a monumental task. Their mother had passed away years ago from a combination of cancer and being a perpetual worrywart. 2 years later, their father, Anthony, died. At the time of his death, Carmen was 21 years old and became guardian of her then 15-year-old sister, Nikki. The untimely loss of their father was the root of the tension between them. Nikki blamed Carmen for the death of their father, and she knew it, although Nikki hadn't verbalized it as much lately. Blame and guilt were parasites eating away at Carmen's soul, and she was tired of toting around her baggage of unhappy feelings. Carmen exhaled, hoping the shift in her breathing pattern would rid her mind of the unwanted and haunting thoughts. She turned back around to check the progress of the elevator and noticed that the scrawny man who had held the door for her was still hovering around the doorway, glaring at her. He licked his lips, flicked his tongue at her a few times, sounding like a dog slurping water, and brushed his fingers across the stubble on his chin. Carmen translated the glint in his lustful eyes and realized he was having a sexual fantasy about her in his mind. "Go to hell!" Carmen snarled at him as she flipped up her middle finger. "Damn weirdo." The man didn't seem to mind Carmen's harsh words because he continued to glare at her. "Nikki has got to stop moving into these apartment buildings filled with freaks and crackpots," she muttered as the bell on the elevator chimed. Carmen stepped inside of the elevator and pressed the 3rd floor button. When she got off the elevator, she noticed that the hallway carpet was wet. She wrinkled her nose because the musty and moldy odor was overpowering. She moved quickly down the enclosed corridor toward Nikki's apartment. Curling her fingers into a fist, Carmen drummed on the door with her knuckles. A short moment later, Frida, Nikki's roommate, answered the door. "Hey, Frida," Carmen greeted politely as Frida allowed her access to their small, cluttered 2-bedroom apartment. The place was littered with piles of laundry that needed to either be cleaned or folded, but Carmen couldn't tell which. "Is Nikki out of bed yet?" Carmen asked, crinkling her nose while comparing the untidiness of the apartment to Nikki and Frida's chaotic and messy lifestyle.
"Why are you already asking a question? You know the answer to."
Frida scraped her fingernails up and down her belly before releasing a loud yawn that assaulted the already stale air with the rotting smell of her morning breath. You know damn well Nikki and I are like vampires and only function after the sun goes down. Carmen tried to inconspicuously cover her nose with the palm of her hand. Frida's breath literally smelled like spoiled food, and its foul odor was making her dizzy.
Well, she's the one who told me to be here this early. I've got to drop my car off at the repair shop, and she promised me that she would drive over there with me so I wouldn't have to sit there and wait while the mechanic worked on my car.
Yeah, Frida answered as she scratched the side of her neck. She told me all about it. I think she would have left work a little earlier, but this older dude walked into the tavern and started paying her some attention. And you know how Nikki has a soft spot for older men.
I know, Carmen answered.
She wasn't giving her full attention to what Frida said because she didn't want their conversation to last longer than necessary. The only thing she wanted her to do was to stop talking. Carmen sauntered into the kitchen area and inspected a banana sitting on the countertop. After checking it thoroughly for bruising, she decided that it appeared safe enough to eat.
He was a nice-looking man, too, Frida continued, to Carmen's annoyance. He looked like he used to play football or something. You know, the type that probably has a large stash of money hidden somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Carmen answered coyly, hoping that Frida picked up that she didn't want to continue their conversation. Carmen noticed a chair that wasn't cluttered with clothes positioned in a corner of the room. She decided to sit down and wait for her sister.
You don't seem like you're in a talkative mood. But then again, you never are.
I'm going back to my room. Besides, Francisco came over early this morning and gave me some grown man loving. My body trembles just thinking about having my ass in the air while he sucks on my sweet, juicy Spanish punani.
Carmen could not have cared less about Frida's sex life. And if her pussy was as funky as her breath, Francisco had to be one nasty motherfucker to put his face anywhere near her smelly ass.
Yeah, whatever. You're telling me way too much information, Carmen said, and began to leave.
She was glad Frida was taking her body funk back into the bedroom.
There's no need to be jealous, honey.
Oh, Lord, here we go, Carmen thought. Now she thinks I'm being insulting.
You? And your stuck-up attitude will get a man to fuck you right one of these days. Hopefully, he'll be able to mellow you out some. How long has it been now since that no-good professor dumped you? What, 9 years? Or is it 10?
Frida snickered.
He had your head all messed up when he canceled the wedding on you after you spent all of your money planning this elaborate event, which you specifically told me that I wasn't invited to. I still haven't forgotten that evil shit. I'm glad he cracked your pissy little face and left you all broken up. You needed to be taught a lesson.
Frida used threatening hand gestures to emphasize her point.
Frida, it's too damn early in the morning to dig up old shit and start a fight with me. I didn't come over here for that.
Carmen was more than willing to bare her claws and stir up an ugly argument if Frida didn't back down.
Trust me, you do not want to toy with me this morning.
Frida chuckled. You don't scare me, honey.
Not one bit,
Frida said, her peace, and then made her way down the narrow corridor to the bedrooms. She banged hard on Nikki's bedroom door.
Your snooty-ass sister is here,
Frida said, loud enough for Carmen to hear. The animosity between Frida and Carmen was like a knife in her back that she couldn't reach. In fact, as Carmen saw it, Frida was a part of the reason that her relationship with Nikki was so sour at times.